This is a replay of the Thursday night, January 25th WGN show. We started around 11:30. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number one-voip.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Got about an hour and a half to spend together. Clearly, there's a few things on my mind, but whatever you are thinking will take precedence if you will call 888-876-5593. 888-ROLLYE. And I think we all have noticed the passing of Melanie Safka. Melanie, a brand new key. I know, shame on you for putting it in the world's worst hit records virtually every year. Well, we won't play that, I promise. However, the follow-up song was almost as bad or good, depending on how you look at this. The Nickel song, remember that? And what was interesting is a lot of people, when it came out by Melanie in 1972, said, well, that's a remake of The New Seekers from last year. No, it actually was a song that Melanie wrote that The New Seekers put out as a 45 first. So we'll hear a little bit of that. But it was interesting. I was reading many of the accounts, and I was looking for one thing in particular, and I could not find it. So if you know, by all means tell me. And here's the deal. You'll see it in a lot of the obits about how her life turned around when she played Woodstock, and she was not yet even a recording act, let alone having a hit record or anything of this nature. And her mom had to drive her up to Woodstock and all that. All right, so you've read all about that. Now, here's what I want to know. Now, I recognize that Woodstock's start to finish was, shall we say, a cluster. And I'll leave it to you to finish that. But the bottom line was there were a lot of things other than the change of venues at the last minute to Max's farm, and other than the rain, and other than the traffic tie-ups and the two-lane roads and all that, there was a lot more in the background of this story that actually was unraveling pretty much before tickets were even sold. But that said, what I'm curious about is who booked Melanie? All right, but she didn't get paid, by the way. Neither did a lot of people at Woodstock. Again, it was part of the theme that I'm telling you. This was screwed up start to finish. And no one knew, of course, that it would become this iconic thing that, to this day would be talked about at reverence, usually with people who weren't there. But that said, here she is. She's 22 years old. She's got no record contract. She's got no track record. She's booked at Woodstock. Who did that? And so if you know, let me know, because I've read all of the obits, pretty much looking for them, because I thought, finally, I'll know, because I've wondered about this for years. And I guess I probably should have taken the initiative long before this and just had her on and asked her. And from everything I know, she was absolutely a lovely person, tremendously together, and good home life, good marriage and family. Sadly, her husband dropped dead in 2010, and they were away. I don't know if she was on tour or what they were doing, but he went out to get some groceries and died. And so that was just horrible, because in addition to being her husband and the father of her children, he was her manager as well. So that was a great loss. But she was a libertarian. In fact, saw her entertaining at a few of the libertarian conventions, which was nice. So rest in peace, Melanie Safka. But if anybody knows how on earth she was booked into Woodstock, and I'll keep looking, because it's one of those things. There's a few things I wonder about that. In fact, it made me think I need to have Pat Boone on before he dies, because I want to talk to him about a few things. I've had him on before, but some things that we didn't cover, I'd like to. Meanwhile, I believe there was a full moon tonight or last night. Yes, one or the other. Sure is resplendent right now. And the new moon is coming up on Friday, February 9th. So if you do your law of abundance checks, that would be Friday, February 9th. 4:59 Central Time, so right before 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So 888-876-5593. I was reading this article about the shopping habits of millennials, which I know it sounds like the mating habits of some species, but yes, the shopping habits of millennials as observed by others. And some of this just really blew my mind. Some of it I was absolutely expecting, but a lot of it. The number of millennials who got their driver's licenses, you know, between age 18 and 25, went down 25% in the last 8 years. And so, is it public transportation? Is it their favorite ride-sharing app? Is it that they're too in debt with college debt to buy a car? Regardless, who knows why, but given the habits of even going to the point of getting the driver's license, it looks like car dealerships could be threatened. Lottery ticket sales are declining. And that's interesting because we talk about this very often, the lottery curse. Apparently the millennials have read that too. But a recent Gallup poll found that 61% of people who are between 50 and 64 years old play the lottery, buy tickets at least somewhat regularly. Only 33% of millennials, only one in three, ever buy a lottery ticket. All right, stiletto is going out of fashion. A good thing, too, if you're wondering. Those are the very high heels that women have worn from time immemorial, and they became very popular again in the 90s, showing off their features and all that. Well, now the millennials hate them. So apparently they're somewhat of a market, a specialized market for this, but they're no longer mainstream. Now, here's one, and it resonated with me only because in the past I filled out a lot of surveys. Yeah, I'm a sucker for that. I don't have the time right now, so I stopped doing it. But for a while, you know, you'd get points or for hotels or whatever, or even occasionally some money or whatever. Fill out the surveys, find your interest. And when I would do that, very often, if it was, say, for a company, maybe an electric company, they'd ask, how important is it that the company make charitable donations to causes with which you, affiliate or believe or whatever? And I always thought that was the most ridiculous question, because why on earth would I care what they're doing? Well, it turns out it's a well-based question, because apparently what is going on is millennials apparently expect to buy from companies that make donations to certain tragedies. And when I say certain tragedies, I mean the ones with which they resonate, clearly, most focusing on social level changes rather than any personal values. But apparently Microsoft, Google, Starbucks, all are playing to that, seeing that that the millennials are prizing that. So, yeah, most of us would say, how good is the product? How much does it cost? Yeah, rarely did I know anybody who said, what's the company donating to? All right, they love buying mobile phones. Well, yeah, good luck. You have to tell us that. That was a waste of ink, to say the least. But what's interesting is there's been a resurgence of classic phones in recent years. Like Motorola trying to revive the flip phones, and this time with a touch screen. Yeah, and the technology itself has somewhat stagnated. Usually, the improvements come up with better cameras or things of this nature. But like it or not, the bottom line is that they are being bought just absolutely routinely, to the point that the latest and the greatest and the newest is what they want. Postcards are a thing of the past. And I would believe that. Of course, I can't remember the last time I ever sent one for any reason. But over the years, of course, they were terrific, because they'd have pictures of this or that or the other or whatever. And, people would also, use them as a means of communicating. In fact, back in the day, 20 million postcards were sold annually. With a picture of the hotel where you're staying or the beach where you're laying or whatever. Well, 20 million has been down now by about 75%, and the decline is accelerating. Why? Well, I probably don't have to tell you. with things like Facebook or WhatsApp or whatever, you know, you're probably not going to see a letter, let alone a postcard. And other than the uniqueness of what was on the other side, the pictures or the advertisement or whatever, there's very little that they had. And now online, you can see a picture of virtually anything anywhere. So also, now here's one thing for postcards to be going down, but napkins, sales of napkins are declining. Yeah, less than two decades ago, 60% of households reported buying napkins. Now, firstly, I was floored right there. 60%? What about the other 40? What are they doing? Well, today it's 40%. Yeah, and so you're saying, what on earth? And in some cases, it's that these individuals are not cooking at home. They're ordering in or taking fast food or something like that and getting napkins with them. So you'd figure that, okay, they're using the napkins. So far, I'm not aghast. It was that the idea that millennials were not buying the napkins because they didn't see a need for them. Yeah, more were prone. I'm going to use a direct quote because I couldn't make this up. To just using their shirt or a towel to clean their food leftovers. My, I can see a couple houses. I don't want to be invited over for a meal. And we'll pick it up right there. But your calls are tantamount. Whatever is on your mind, I'll make sure is on mine. But at this moment, the time has come. I know you've been waiting. It's time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
You know that I'm not a gambler, but I've been gambled on. They put in a nickel and I sing a little song. Da 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 da. They put in a nickel and I sing a little song. They're lucky, but it seems like they always win. And gambling is illegal in the state of mind I'm in. And if I had a nickel for each time that I've been put on, I would be that nickel man. I know what's been going on. We're only putting in our little
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is Melanie, now the late Melanie. Hate to say that. And she wrote it, and like I say, the New Seekers had it out in 71, and it was a mid-charter, and then she put it out as a, or that Buddha put it out, as a follow-up to Brand New King, a key which was number one, of course. This wasn't. I think it got to the mid-30s, and her husband, Peter, had produced that also. The flip side was something you probably heard, maybe not by her, but certainly she's responsible for it, and that she wrote it. What have they done to my song, Ma? Yeah, so both of those are from the Candles in the Rain album. Well, actually, the Nickel song is from the Good Book, but What Have They Done to My Song was from Candles in the Rain, which, of course, was her her view of Woodstock. But it turned out in some ways to be more of a curse than a blessing at first, because as that got popular, she'd do these concerts and all the people in the audience would have candles and the fire department would shut them down. And so yeah, that there was a year there where I don't think she completed that many concerts, and maybe after a few people heard it, they didn't book her as often. But nonetheless, she came back, of course, with a Brand New Key and then the Nickel song. All right, so 888-876-5593. That's 8888 Raleigh. We were talking about millennials, and it's interesting. These are surveys, obviously, so they're about as accurate as surveys are, which is nil. But I love millennials hate business suits. Unless they're lawyers or in the financial industry, apparently the millennials will not dress up for work. Yes, casual Fridays are casual every days, and t-shirts and denim jeans are the norm. And I thought this was interesting because it reminded me of television news. Now, I love watching local news in various markets, especially in the small markets, because I consider it to be a form of comedy. And they're not trying, but that's the way it comes out. But for years, for decades, all the anchors, men and women, looked about the same. And most of them had gone to the Magid School in Iowa, where they, you know, basically took normal people and turned them into anchors in terms of how they looked and what they wore and how their hair was done. Well, there's no school anymore, clearly. And every time I turn it on, I'm like, who dressed these people? Yeah. And, you know, can you possibly look worse in something? And it's astounding to me. No names, of course, and I can't think of anybody in particular. And again, Chicago is not a good example because usually by the time people get to Chicago, they've got themselves together. But you look at some of the smaller markets and you go, how is this even on television? So apparently it's not just TV news anymore. It's millennials not wanting to wear anything but jeans anywhere. Well, there you have it. Board games are on the decline. And the first thing I thought there is you haven't been to Utah. Yes, that's right. Monday night is family fun night and board games are sold out the wazoo in Utah. But I guess everywhere else, video games, of course, have taken over. And of course, a lot of the board games themselves have been digitized and turned into phone apps and computer games. So the actual, you know, go out and buy the Milton Bradley set is really on the decline. Other than, like I say, in Utah, that's about it. But interesting, interest in the board games rising, even though the sales aren't, because again, computerized and mobile screens and all of that. Now, here's one I found interesting, and probably a good thing, but I never would have thought of it either way. Fabric softeners are becoming extinct. Now, of course, that could be chalked up to the fact that millennials aren't doing laundry, but and who could blame them? But more to the point. Oh, I love this. The writer of this article blamed it in part on the rise of feminism. Duh, come on. The decline of the stay-at-home mom. Some say many are opting to have their parents help them. Parents, stop that. Stop that now. All right. Millennials feel they're too busy for the laundry. But the other thing that I found interesting was that they said that today's washing machines are more advanced and you don't need fabric softener anymore. So the bottom line is it's expected that by 2030, fabric softeners will be a thing of the past, kind of like rotary phones or DVDs. But already they're down over 15%. Right. Millennials are too broke for life insurance and stocks. Well, there's no great surprise there. Again, we talk about college debt and things of that money. But as far as the stocks, part of the reason is that they were coming of age during some full-blown market crashes, and they saw parents and others losing their portfolios, seeing things cut in half. And you see a lot more millennials who are saying, I'm not putting my money in that stock market. So indeed. And yes, as I mentioned before, student debt. But there is a recent solution to that that I have flat out never heard of, and I'm not 100% sure exactly how it works. But yes, colleges that are not going to charge you anything to go there, except, yeah, it's the big except. We'll get to all that and more next hour right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 1977 Epic Records, Wet Willie and Street Corner Serenade. And it was Bob in Lockport who emailed that request. And it's fine to email, just understand that I may or may not see it. If I do, I'll respond. And if I don't, well, yeah, you know what'll happen. Nothing. All right, but happy to do that. The best thing to do is call on the air. And we'd love to hear from you. At least I do. 888-876-5593. 8888-Raleigh. All right, so. We'll get to James in Oregon about student loans, but let me finish where we are. Not all of it, but things that millennials are not buying. And one of them is they're starting to question the student loan. Of course, being millennials, most of them are stuck with them already. And, of course, the rise of the non-viable degree doesn't actually help you get a job later in life or at any time. So half of all millennials that graduated from college find themselves working in jobs they never thought they would have. And I'm not saying that in the positive sense, years after graduation. But so here comes the income sharing agreement. And this is a very interesting story. It actually started out about 5 years ago being a lot more interesting to the colleges. Now, some of them, like Purdue, are backing away from it. And there's a lot of legal reasons and all that. But here is the deal. The kid goes to school, or this student, I should say, for free, absolutely for free, takes all the classes, does whatever they're going to do, graduates. Then, once you are successful, you pay a percentage of your gross salary. Now, there are certain protections, such as, you know, there has to be a minimum of that before they take anything. But there are a few problems. Firstly, depending upon what you majored in, this might or might not be a good deal for the college, let alone you. You know, how many bachelor's of sociology degrees are going to actually, bring riches? So part of it is what degrees are these kids looking at? The other thing that's interesting, though, is how many of these colleges have just gone askew from various laws, state and federal, because they're not treating them as loans, and they are. So it was 2016 that Purdue announced that they'd offer an income share agreement, and that was the first major school, probably a school that, you know, which the average person would have heard of them, right? And they called the program Back a Boiler, as in Boilermaker, the school's nickname. And so the university president talked to Congress and all that kind of stuff, and other universities wanted in, and they were thinking about it. And Purdue's program won an award for most innovative public policy proposal, and I'd say about 15 colleges or universities quickly launched their own program. So last June, they said, we're going to suspend the Back a Boiler program. And there were a few reasons. And by the way, other schools quickly followed that as well, as far as that goes. But one of them is that the program servicer, Vimo Education, went out of business. And so that's kind of a behind-the-scenes reason, obviously, but the people who were making it happen. And Vimo was also sued by 47 students that were part of this program for a profit coding academy, and the student were alleging that they actually colluded to run a high-cost ISA program violating state and federal law. And so the students agreed to repay 20 to 25% of their pre-tax income each month for 3.5 years, with monthly payments as high as $2,500 a month. And when you added it up, some of these contracts had these students paying back $270,000. So clearly the authorities got interested about that time. And they started to clamp down on Purdue and other schools. And so there was a consent order between the private ISA providers, the schools, and the government that said, you're violating a federal law if you tell these students that ISAs aren't loans or don't create debt. Because, of course, you know, and by the way, you look at the Purdue website when it was up there, and the first thing it said about ISA is this is not a loan or credit. Well, the Department of Education had something to say about it, and so the ISAs must be treated as loans. But more to the point of the students that were interviewed And there aren't all that many. No, none of these schools had an outreach program that really talked about how many students and how they were doing. University of Utah had 121 students who participated in their program over a four-year period. And not many. That was, there's 34,000 students enrolled at University of Utah, and 121 students were participating in the ISA. Other schools, of course, were offering things that, like I say, ran afoul over various laws and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line was that these kids were winding up owing quite a bit, and the ISA wouldn't allow for prepayment. The only way you could prepay it is if you basically paid off whatever that loan could be, depending upon your imputed earning power. And so there was one Purdue student who had taken out a $5,000 back of boiler loan, and she pays 2% of her monthly income, which is not much at this point. It's $80 a month, and it could go more if she makes more money, but she has to do this for another 8 years, and if she wants to pay it off early, they want $12,500. So she's saying, hardest $5,000 I ever borrowed. And in fact, that's what she did. So it's an interesting concept, I think, all the way around. But it needs a certain more, if not oversight, probably some rules and regs that are more definitive than they've got. And so now you've got also the problem is what is the kid or student, I should say, because they're not all children, obviously. What is the student majoring in? And I think that should matter a lot. But while I was first reading about these a few years ago when they came into existence and got a certain amount of publicity, the thing that I wondered about was, okay, so you're a freshman and you go in there under an ISA. What if you don't graduate? And what if you don't graduate because you've A, dropped out, or B, changed colleges? Because it's not unknown for a student not to complete the 4 years of college at the same institution in the same manner. So what happens? And so you wind up having a lot of questions that they haven't ironed out. But nonetheless, the one thing I think is a given, and millennials are saddled with it, but at the same time are very much down on the concept, are the student loans. Yeah, because of course, very often these are thrown at the incoming freshman who has no real world way to even understand, only that they know that they're getting free money, except till you go to pay it back. And so it seems to me like something's wrong here. But even apart from getting a loan for college, when you look at the kind of money that students are paying for degrees now, yeah, price is what you pay, value is what you get. Is there any value in these deals? Now, of course, if you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to have to go to college. But for everybody else, this does not make economic sense. Yeah, and maybe that will change. Haven't heard about it yet, but the millennials are none too pleased. Pick up what else they are none too pleased about and some of what they are pleased about coming up. But we got James in Oregon. James, welcome to WGN Radio.
Good evening. Yeah. Hey, I'm interested in that student loan stuff. Back in the 70s, my first wife wanted to become a nurse, and she got some what they call grants and scholarships and stuff, but we also had to take out a loan, for over 3 years. But she got those wrote off over a 10-year period because after she graduated, she worked in a public right. service thing, which would be a hospital.
Right. There are many opportunities for medical professionals. For instance, doctors can have their entire student debt written off because they're practicing, say, for 2 or 3 years on an Indian reservation. There's certain requirements of what constitutes the public service, but you're right. Medical professionals especially can get that debt written off, but not everybody else can.
No, but I'm thinking why. I mean, I don't think people would be as upset in the forgiveness of loans if they were seeing something being returned. And so you got a basket weaving graduate certificate or whatever in the college, you can always work for AmeriCorps, they call them, or go in the military. You could be a teacher. You could do all sorts of things that over a period of, say, 3 to 5 or 10 years or something, the government would write part of that off because you're putting yeah. back. I mean, they're always complaining they don't have enough teachers and stuff like that. And why don't they do something like that instead of just saying we're going to wipe out all these debts, nobody has to pay anything anymore?
Interesting.
I think that's what really bothers people.
No, and I'll tell you what really bothers people more than anything are the individuals who have scrimped and saved, and the parents who have done without to put their child through college and pay for it. And they're saying, "Hell yeah. no, I don't want the family across the street that just lived high on the hog and took out a bunch of loans to get off scot free." Yeah. But what you're mentioning yeah. Is a viable idea. Now, I think they'd have to really refine what these individuals would have to do. And, you know, because like medical, it's obvious. But like you say, basket yeah. weaving, not, you know, or sociology, not as easy to define. But I don't have a problem with coming up with something. Heck, I'd like them to just rebuild our infrastructure.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking, just of giving everything away. Yeah.
Right.
And I understand. I mean, there's people like that. People are saying that I paid all my debts back and stuff like that.
Yes.
And why should this person get a free ride?
And they're absolutely right. But you know, this is an election year, so of course you're going to hear about all sorts of things.
Yeah, and also I was going to talk about the driving. The kids, millennials, they aren't seeming to drive. You see what California is doing, proposing this legislature out there is all cars built or new cars built or sold in California, I think after 2028, have these speed limiters in them now that they will only go 10 miles pop. They can only go up to 10 miles over the speed limit, the speed limit.
The intelligent speed limiter. This is Scott Weiner in San Francisco.
Yeah.
But, you know, as soon as you said California, I started to laugh because I remember in the mid-90s, I was living there, and that was the year, whatever it was, 94, 95, when they had mandated that this big percentage of state-owned trucks had to be on electric car, you know, fuel-free or not fuel-free, but gas-free. Well, of course, they had to completely rescind that because what they were mandating didn't exist at that point. It wasn't on the market. So they mandated a bill for a product that didn't turn out to exist at that point in time. So, you know, California politicians are wonderful for coming up with some of the most interesting. Two of my favorites were there was a guy, I guess it's about 30 years ago now, who proposed taxing the satellites in geostationary orbit above the state. Now, I particularly loved that because I thought, well, if you're taxed, that must be a property tax. And if you have property tax, that means you have benefits. So who are they going to send up when the transponder's on fire? So that didn't work out. But the other thing was in the 60s. And I wish I knew her name. I'll have to find it somewhere because a Los Angeles representative of some sort was running. She was going to get rid of smog. And she was going to do it by boring big holes into the San Gabriel Mountains and putting in fans. Remember this? To blow it out to sea.
Yeah, I remember. I wasn't there at that. Well, I was there in the 60s, early 60s, and then we moved back in the 70s. But, yeah, I remember hearing about that. They were going to cut holes in the mountains and build
put in
fans.
And Exactly. It's like when they finally built the Marina Freeway to Marina Del Rey, there was someone proposing, no, you can't go that way. You have to go out over the ocean and come back. You know, it's like, what? Yeah, so California, there's no shortage of lunatics. So sure, why not? But I don't think Mr. Weiner is going to get very far with his intelligent speed limiter.
Yeah, no, but also I heard today too that I guess they're going to build a high speed rail between Las Vegas and L.A. now.
Well, I guess because I-15 is so crowded, it is too. I will say that.
Yeah.
But, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right.
They said they're going to have 11,000 people working on it.
Well, I guess that is a public work program of sorts.
Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy.
I just
think on the loans, the school loans and stuff. There's ways they can do stuff that
would make it palatable.
Pay back without just giving, waving the magic wand and creating money we don't have, you know.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. I like it. All right, thanks for calling. Good.
I'm going to listen to some more tonight.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, we're ultimately going to get to Karen. Don't go away. Karen in Schaumburg said she knows how Melanie got booked for Woodstock. Well, we know she didn't get paid, but who booked her? We'll find out coming up on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is Barbara George. I know you don't love me no more. Dave and LaSalle wanted to hear that. That was 1961 on AFO. If you're wondering, AFO stood for All for One. That was Harold Batiste's label. And most of that stuff was distributed by Sue in the early 60s. But Batiste had all sorts of distribution problems, moved to L.A., did very well. Then moved back to New Orleans around 1990 or so, revived AFO, and did some interesting unreleased early recordings. Now, the new material, well, I'll leave that to you. But the unreleased early stuff was really nice. All right, so I don't know. That's the point. But Karen does know, and she's going to be telling us exactly what the deal is with how Melanie got booked into Woodstock, coming up on WGN Radio.
In my neighborhood, well, folks don't live so good now. The rooms are small, most of the buildings made of wood. I hear the neighbors talking about you and me. Guess I've heard most every word, 'cause the talking's loud and the walls are much too thin. Seen him before, and standing there together, don't you know they look so fine? Well, I don't wanna hear it anymore. I don't wanna hear them anymore. But the talk just never ends. The heartache soon begins. The talk is so loud.
Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yes, it's Jerry Butler. VJ, 1964, and it was Sam and Gurney that said, "I could pick anything I wanted" by Jerry Butler. So there you have it. And actually, a lot of people would think that's a B-side. That was the A-side. But the B-side, I Stand Accused, became the hit. Randy Newman wrote that. But the A side, I don't want to hear it anymore. Jerry and Billy Butler wrote that, and it was just a wonderful song. And you can look at the matrix numbers and all that, and you'll see that, yes, indeed, that was the A side. Okay, so 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. Karen in Schaumburg, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh.
Hey, Karen, so tell me all.
Okay, so I don't know if you're familiar with Nicole Sandler.
Yeah.
She was a DJ back in the day, and she has an internet show. And so she reposted the show that she had done an interview about 2 years ago with Melanie.
Uh-huh.
Asked her, and it was on the anniversary of Woodstock when she did the interview, and asked her how she got booked. And it was basically Melanie's husband had an office in, I believe it might have been the Brill Building, because she gave the address, and it sounded like the Brill Building. And the guys that were organizing Woodstock also had an office there, and I guess they became friendly. And the husband said, can you give her a try? And they were like, okay.
I'll be darned. Yeah, because she married Peter the year before. That's right. And Peter, who I always just call him Peter because I've never been able to pronounce it. I can spell it,
yeah,
but I can't pronounce
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
But nonetheless, that makes sense. They did give her a try. She never made a dime. She probably said that on the show, too.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. Yeah. There's a YouTube up there if you wanted to see it. Her interview is about halfway through the show.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of those interviews, but good on Nicole for asking that, because that's the thing I haven't seen anywhere else, is who the hell booked her? And So now we know.
Now we know the rest of the story.
I think at the time, I'm not even sure if they were married at the time. They were certainly together, but I think that they got married a year later, but others say, no, they got married a year before. But either way, they were together until he suddenly died in 2010, and that was so sad.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's good to know. And it makes all the sense in the world. I knew there was somebody in there somewhere. All right.
It had to be.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Well, you know, she must have married him beforehand, because I think after that whole debacle, she might have rethought it. So that's just great.
She said that it was pretty frightening getting up there in front of all those people, because she had never experienced anything like that before.
Well, right, so. And there was a band that was supposed to be on her, on before her, and of course there were several acts she was up there, and of course it's terrible waiting off stage, seeing all these people that you think are just terrific, and you're going, I got to follow this. Well, it turns out whatever the band was right before her, they wouldn't go on, and the reason they wouldn't do it is they thought they'd be electrocuted, and she was too dumb to realize it was a possibility.
Yeah, she mentioned that in the interview, and I can't remember who she said the band was now.
Like the string band or something. It was nobody anybody knew, at least nobody I knew. You know, but then again, that could be half of Woodstock. So
yeah, she said it was like just like so eclectic that, you know, someone like her and then someone like Jimi Hendrix.
Right, right.
They had so many different types of bands playing the festival.
Oh, sure, and last minute they had a lot of changes. Like I say, there were all sorts of financial irregularities in that. So, you know, what I to this day don't understand about that is how the hell they didn't realize what was going to go on in terms of how many tickets would be sold. They were advertising the damn thing on WABC, of course, in the tri-state area. Numbers alone would tell you that this is going to be big.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, she said that it started out that it was supposed to be like an arts and crafts festival along with music, and it just mushroomed.
Well,
you know?
There were so many things. Again, the venue changed at the last minute. It wasn't going to be on Max's Farm originally. And then the guys who were involved with it at the start had done Miami Pop Festival and all that, and they had a pretty good handle on this, and they pulled out early in the game due to financial issues. So I think the people who actually pulled it off had zero experience doing it.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So good deal. Well, that's a wonderful story. Now I'll sleep tonight. Thank you.
All right, Raleigh. Glad that I couldn't be of help.
Okay, it's great. Thanks. Yes.
Take care.
So Karen saves the day. That was the deal. Her husband. So Peter was the one. It makes sense. Makes absolute sense. And like I say, I know that they were scrambling toward the end. And a couple of acts did get paid, but I think it depended heavily on who booked them and what the contracts looked like. And then one of the guys was supposed to, and you probably know more about this than I do, but, you know, I just read it in passing about 5 years ago, do a 50th anniversary. And at the last minute, for a variety of reasons, that got canceled. But I saw an interview with him that he said, well, this time everybody got paid. Well, that's good. All right. So 888-NOVEL, 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, shall we get back to these millennials? Now, I will say this next line was my favorite because of a typo. All right. Yeah. It started out by talking about one of the newest and most unique changes in the millennial generation is a strong preference for growing bears. And I thought, I love bears. I do. I have a real fondness for bears at a distance, of course. Well, it turns out that it was a typo. They're talking about growing beards. But for a few minutes there, I was really on board. Oh, growing bears. How do you do that? Not in the city. Where do you keep them? Yeah. All right. So probably half of the millennials, they say, I assume this is half of the males. I can't believe they mean half of the millennials, because that'd be all of the males, have some form of a beard, making them feel unique. So the problem here is apparently razor companies are struggling. Yeah. And that's why they're trying to appeal to more women now. Obviously not for beards, at least I don't think so, but for those more sensitive areas. So, younger people, millennials, don't use doorbells. Well, I haven't had one in years, so what do I know? But apparently what the deal is there is that millennials don't ring the doorbell because they phone ahead with their cell phone, I'm here, or what have you. So apparently doorbells are becoming a lot less popular due to texting and calling. So, yeah, usually if somebody's visiting the apartment, it's, you know, a friend or a delivery guy, or in all these examples, the visitor has your phone number and is using it. Organic foods are hurting processed foods among millennials, and it's about time. But I won't even go into that more in depth, because there's another part of this article that said millennials don't cook, so organic or not, and we'll get to that. But millennials are more likely, this sort of goes back to the college theme again, to pay for online courses, feel they're getting more bang for their buck, and they're doing it where they want to. Likewise, opting for rental apps rather than hotels. Yeah, I don't know. They're braver than me. Most of those services, the Airbnbs of the world, require exactly too much information in a database than I'm willing to put there. But apparently millennials have absolutely no fear about that. And so they're avoiding the Holiday Inn in favor of renting somebody's apartment. And so that is the deal. And, you know, before you would say, well, at the hotel I get maid service every day. They change the sheets. Good luck on that. So now I guess it doesn't matter, does it? So what else do we have? Oh, yeah, they don't go to the supermarket. Well, they do. They just don't go inside. And you see that very often now with the parking spots that are restricted for those picking up their ordering. But in general, the trend is to not go to the supermarket and either have your food delivered or pick it up and have someone bring it to the car. And I find this very interesting, because I remember back around 1980 when I was living in Bel Air, a business on Sepulveda Boulevard opened up, and it was a drive-through grocery store. All drive-through, couldn't go in. You know, you drive through and you tell them what you want, and they'd bring it out. And it failed miserably. And the reason that it did was that the shoppers were insistent that they go in to, you know, squeeze the Charmin, so to speak, feel the vegetables and all that kind of stuff. They didn't want to just take what some clerk put in the bag. Well, no longer that's exactly what they want. All right, now here was one I found very interesting. Millennials prefer soap bottles to soap bars. They feel that soap bars are dirty. Well, I guess that would depend on who you're sharing them with. Maybe communally speaking, but 60% of millennials told Market Watch that soap bars are full of germs and disgusting. 60% of Americans over 65 say they'll be happy to wash their faces with soap bars. I would have thought that was 95%. What do I know? Cereals are becoming a thing of the past, and you won't believe why. Because when I first heard this, I thought, okay, cereals are a thing of the past because they're probably not very healthy. No, probably about it, Raleigh. Okay, true, but they're not very healthy. And all that. No, it has nothing to do with that. Cereal is not popular because the millennials say it is inconvenient because they would have to wash the dish after eating it. The dish and the spoon. Too much work, I guess. Well, they could get those little packages, like they, the variety packs they used to sell. Yeah, just cut them open. But of course, this might require, you know, a knife, and it could even require a spoon, though I assume you can get the plastic kind. But all right, so what else do we have? They spend more money to rent apartments in metropolitan areas. Well, hell, so does everybody else. Have you looked at the rents? But what they're talking about in this is that apparently millennials, they say virtually no millennials choose, and this is statistical, obviously some millennials do, to live in rural areas. That's interesting. They're avoiding rural areas. Now, I assume that doesn't include the exurbs and the suburbs and all that kind of stuff. Traditional book sales declining. Not that people are reading less, but apparently audiobooks find favor. I hate reading things on an audiobook. I want to hold the book, you know, but of course, I'm not a millennial or anything else near it. All right, so apparently millennials don't like fast food. This explains why Burger King has come up with the veggie burger, I guess. But apparently the fast food brands, you would almost expect the McDonald's or Burger King's of the world. But what they really are avoiding, the millennial doesn't like the mid-priced restaurants. They don't like the TGI Fridays and the Applebee's and things of that nature. So interesting to see where the decline is on that. Millennials are not into golfing. Well, neither am I. I remember being a program director at a radio station that will remain nameless, and I had a guy above me who was the operations director. Everybody gets a title, right? And he invited me out to lunch, and I thought, good, a meal, you know, this is good. And I go, and he said, oh, no, we're going golfing. I said, what? And he said, and you're going to be my caddy. Yeah. So I lugged his golf clubs around, and God, that's about 50 years ago almost, and I'll never forget it. Needless to say, I never agreed to share a meal with the guy again. Regular milk is out, and almond milk, soy milk. I don't know about you. I don't trust the soy stuff. But any type of vegan milk you can think of. All right. Now, get away from their food habits and tell you that millennials are not into cruises, theme parks, or golf courses. Well, the golf courses, of course, we just told you they weren't into golf. But theme parks, they want to ditch outside activities entirely. That would include zoos. What about those bears they wanted to raise? All right, so apparently they see cruises as unimpressive, to say the least. They've got their reasons, but trust me, they're just not buying tickets. And I told you about the casual restaurants, the TGI Fridays, the world they don't like. They donate a lot less money to churches, right? That's a sad reality. And of course, there's also a count on how many of these millennials are on food stamps already, so to speak. They don't have anything to donate. But nonetheless, as a group, they're not for that. I just realized I can't share the rest of the article with you because all of a sudden, all of a sudden, I'm besieged with not only spam but things that are truly online threatening to me. So I'll either reload the page or we'll just move along. In fact, we'll talk to Frank in Austin. Fran in Austin, yes. And you too, coming up right here on WGN Radio.
How far
in radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's the showman. You can tell General Johnson anywhere, can't you? He wrote it, and it was Richie Barrett who produced it, 1965 on Swan, and it was Steve in Riverside who wanted to hear it. So there you have it, Steve. All right, Fran is in Austin. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. Well, all this talk made me think about plant-based foods.
Yeah, there is plant-based food. It's known as a salad.
Yeah, exactly. That's my idea. But it's, you know, it's weird because people, a lot of people who eat these things and who worry about this stuff, they're all worried about what their meat is being, you know, fed, if they, and how meat is raised, and, you know, all the hormones and the chemicals and this and that and the other thing. But if it's plant-based, it's good.
They don't know what's been sprayed on it.
They don't know. I mean, there are bad plants. I mean, we've been talking about these mushrooms that people have been getting out of their yards.
Worse than bad plants. All I have to do is use the M word, Monsanto. Look at what they're spraying on it.
I know, exactly. But that's good for you, but a hamburger isn't.
Right, right.
You know, right. At least I know that a cow is a cow is a cow.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I love cows. I think they're wonderful, and it does bother me when these 4-H kids will raise something, and they've given it a name, and they love it, and then they sell it, and they're so proud it's going to be hamburger. But I prefer to think it came in a plastic container at the grocery store.
That's the way I've always thought of it. Yeah, chickens? Oh, no, it's not that little peeping chicken that you know. No, it's this thing that comes in a package, and it's... You know.
That's right. It came that way. Well, unfortunately, now with chicken, lab-grown chicken, of course, is here. It's approved, cell-cultivated.
I think I remember. I was going to call that night, and I got sidetracked. What was that all about? I don't understand that.
Oh, this is here. Yes, the USDA gave their final approval to chicken fully grown in a lab. And what they do, they culture the cells. And the meat is actually chicken, they say, just not one hatched from an egg. None that are ever going to have feathers and go bark or anything like that. The new cultivated chicken is so far not in any grocery stores. At least I remember it was the summer when I had read about this. But the USDA gave two companies approval to sell lab-grown chicken. Now, they don't call it, they say cell-cultivated meat, made from growing animal cells in stainless steel vats. And... They say this is an alternative to agriculturally raised meat, but it is an animal and not plant based.
I
know.
I don't want it.
I know.
No.
I know. In big steel tanks. Oh, yum! Nothing gets your hunger going like that. And
they don't even, from what I remember you saying, they don't even have to inform us.
No. But there's so much that doesn't have to be on a label. And what I love is even the things that do have to be a label don't have to be on a label, because all this genetically modified stuff where they say it must be marked. No, they can say, here is the QR code. Click this. Well, if you don't click the QR code, you have no idea that it's loaded with genetically modified stuff.
Oh, my God, and who reads QR codes?
Well, that's the way it is. And, you know, John hates to go to the grocery store with me because I read every friggin' label there is. And, you know, I'm big on this. And when I found out, because I thought I was eating things that had no genetic modifications, and then I thought, well, let me read a QR code. Oh, my God, they're allowed to put it in the QR code.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
It's bad enough I've just recently gotten to where, I mean, and there's no way, I mean, the technology is not such that I can go through the grocery store
and
reading labels. I would be there for 12 hours.
Right.
You know, and people behind me would start yelling because I'm trying to focus this little...
Right, no, you're lucky, but, you're lucky you know what the damn thing is.
but and I'm really happy to know that nowadays. I don't have to have somebody, you know, come and help me organize my canned goods.
Right, exactly.
Like I used to have systems like, okay, if I were going to buy canned soup, I would only buy one kind.
Right.
At a time so that I wouldn't get them mixed up.
Exactly.
You know, things like that. And it's nice to not have to do that.
Right.
But it's also scary because I can also read some of the labels. And now, I don't know what means what. You know, I'm trying, because my sugar's up again, so I'm trying to think, okay,
I hate to do this.
How many
I absolutely
have
hate
sugar
to do this.
In them.
Oh God, you have ended the show. I hate so.
Oh my goodness.
Let us pick this discussion up next week.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
All
appreciate
right.
it.
Have a good weekend.
All right.
Okay.
You too. And James from the South Side, next week, Tuesday, we will spend a lot of time. He sends me thousands of stories, and they're all interesting. Yes, people behaving very badly. So on that note, we thank Brett for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for listening and the three of you who called. It seemed like that anyway. All right. So until then, until Monday night live show, tomorrow night's a replay of something or other. But Monday night will be live at 10 o'clock for Monday Night Trivia. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.